Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Nightlight, everybody. Want to first thank Ken Quiet Hawk for his amazing intro. He and his wife are native storytellers. Please check them out on the internet. They are amazing, talented, spiritual people, well worth getting to know. And I want to thank those of you who are listening and joining us tonight. If you're listening in archive on YouTube, please subscribe. It lets us know you're out there. It's going to be a fun night tonight. I have one of my favorite people on tonight. I have Mary Joyce, who is the editor of the website Skyships Over Cashiers. She joins us again for some fascinating information on the gray ETs and some tall white ETs who were observed by a U.S. Air Force weather specialist in a remote section of Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada from 1965 to 1967. And time permitting, we'll also talk about how to fend off an alien abduction, something everyone should know. Mary has worked for two major metropolitan newspapers, the Orlando Sentinel in Florida as an artist and columnist, and the Oakland Press in Michigan as a Sunday magazine editor and then a feature editor. On the side, she's written magazine articles and books, and since 2008, she has been the main researcher and editor for Skyships Over Cashiers website, which features a wide variety of cutting-edge topics, from UFOs to secret underground bases, from Bigfoot to Cherokee Little People. Mary has gone from investigating mob stories in Detroit, including Jimmy Hoffa's death, to interviewing people with the highest top-secret clearance about clandestine government activities. She's even had a face-to-face interview with a whistleblower with cosmic top-secret clearance who once worked within the top tier of the infamous international cabal. Because of her website and book, she's been a frequent guest on radio and TV shows, as well as Nightlight, in the USA and Canada, the United Kingdom, and Australia. And you can find her website at www.skyshipsovercashiers.com. Please check it out after the show, of course. You will be amazed at the material she covers. Her archives are phenomenal, and she has over a decade's worth of archives there. You will be so impressed by how she presents material, how she triggers your mind to start working, and sends you on many adventures into checking out other material that you would never have gotten into before. It's an amazing website. I highly recommend it, and I'm so very grateful that she comes on and share some of her material with us every month. So, welcome to the show, Mary. I'm so glad you're back.
Thank you. You certainly do give a wonderful introduction. I almost sound special.
Well, if you do much more, I'm going to have to ask you to stay longer because it's going to take up half the show reading your bio.
It sounds that way, doesn't it? My goodness. Anyhow, that was very nice of you. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Totally. I eat up your website, and every time, you know, we talk about it, we sort of go back and forth and figure out what we're going to be talking about. I do find other things that I find fascinating as well. So I don't know where to start, really, except you have some fascinating articles on ETs, and then you have that lovely interview with that gentleman who was the Air Force man who worked with the ETs, which fascinated me. So let's get into the ET stuff, and then we can get into
I'll tell you what, we'll get started with the man that you're referring to. His name is Charles Hall. And I learned about his book 16 years ago. And
oh, wow.
He had, I think, really kept a constant diary of his experience as a weather specialist in the remote part of Nellis Air Force Base. So he was out there calculating the weather, for the planes to fly. But he was isolated. And there were others before him who had the job, but when they encountered the ETs that also live out there, it freaked them out. And he was the first one who stayed for any length of time and actually did some serious interacting with the ETs. So he had interactions with what they call the tall whites, and also with the grays, and also with a Nordic type of ET. And the most recent postings that you're referring to on the website have to do with his interactions with the tall whites and with the grays. And I eventually got to meet him. He and his wife were doing some kind of a presentation in, I don't remember the place anymore, perhaps Virginia, but Evelyn Gordon, who is a co-founder of this website, she and I went to visit them. They proved to be just the most down-to-earth, honest people who had no ulterior motive for coming up with these stories. In fact, he had originally kept this diary and published the information primarily as a legacy for his children and grandchildren. So he wasn't out there trying to get attention, and he certainly is basically kind of a quiet, shy guy. Very, very believable. Some of the things that stand out in my mind regarding the tall whites is they're kind of tall and thin, and when they wear the right clothes, they can mix in with humans, but not well. And so what they would do is, especially the women, they enjoyed dressing up like humans and going into Vegas. And in Vegas, you can get away with a lot of stuff and people won't pay any attention to you. So that was one of the ways that the women enjoyed, you know, visiting Earth. But they described, they'd had a base there in this area for many, many years. I have no idea when they first came there. But Charles got to meet the daughter of one of the tall whites. And she had been born during the presidency of James Madison, which he was president in 1809-1817. So clearly these tall whites live longer than we do, and clearly they have been coming to Earth for a long time. They described coming to Earth as almost like a bus tour, you know, a tour of the cosmos or a tour of the planet. And the Earth was also used as a place to refurbish their vehicles and to, you know, have some R&R here on Earth. So that's kind of some highlights from his story.
Well, I think when he was selected for this, he first of all, he has amazing degrees to his benefit, so that he's not, you know, a high school person. He has some really impressive degrees that back up his cum as fidus, so to speak.
Which really has proved to help him when he sees things from the present looking back. Because when
right.
he was on that base, it was in 65 and 67, he was clearly a very young man, so he wouldn't have had all those credentials with him. But that's certainly, that education, and I think one of the degrees is nuclear engineering, certainly
yeah.
helped him better understand and better explain, you know, what the what the ships were like that these ETs used, and, you know, explain the propulsion systems and things of that nature.
I think what confused me was the Army basic, or the Air Force, told him that, you know, he didn't need top clearance. Nothing he was going to see was top secret. He, you know, wasn't under any restrictions at all. I don't understand, you know, and he didn't really talk about any of this, which I find, you know, back in the 60s, it would have been, I mean, they were at, let me see, they were at Area 53 and Area 54, so that they were in that same area as Area 51. And yet there was he never leaked anything to anybody, but, you know, he's written his four book compendium is 1500 pages long. So, you know, he kept amazing notes on what was going on, or at least, you know, when he wrote it all. And the other part that I find fascinating is that for someone as young as he was at that time, he had the ability to understand, you know, he wasn't given a handbook on how to interact with these people. He figured it out himself.
He really had to stumble around and learn it. He did make a reference somewhere in the volumes of pages that he wrote that as a child, he was kind of calm, cool, and collected. So his temperament helped him deal with us also. If you were high-strung and suddenly facing ETs, you probably would have a hard time staying cool.
Yeah, and it was almost as though he felt that he treated them like royalty. In other words, he didn't really speak unless spoken to in many situations. He enjoyed it when the kids came and they brought children to play around in the area. I loved the fact that he kept catalogs like Montgomery Ward and Sears and stuff like that, and the lady ETs would like to, you know, look through his catalogs to pick out. Apparently, there were clothes there that the military had picked out for them, and you could tell apparently that, you know, rather old military people had picked out the clothing that they had for them.
And the women didn't like it, and so they would
not
find
at all.
These outfits in Charles's catalogs. That they liked, and because there was and probably still is a cooperative arrangement with our military, the military would give what they wanted.
Well, and they didn't have, you know, great demands anyhow. But there were two. It was a mountain range, and on, I believe, the left side is where the ships, the scout ships, and the other ships were sort of hangared, and on the right side, in a mountain, was where they had their living facilities.
And they're very well camouflaged, so you're not going to be able to find them on Google. But apparently some kind of arrangement has been like that for a very long time.
Sorry, just choked on myself. Goodness. So I found this fascinating.
It sounds like I better talk here. I think I better talk here. But if you get to the website and you go to our section that's simply labeled ETs and Bigfoot, his stories are near the top of that section, not in the archives, but the current section. And there is a video there if you have time. It's a good way to learn the highlights of his experiences, because I, with my editor's hat on, I would have condensed his four books into probably one volume, because he truly goes into enormous detail. And because he was keeping apparently such a thorough diary, there's a repetitive amount of details in his books. And so before anybody goes off and buys all four volumes, which I did do and I did read, I would suggest watching the video. It will take considerably less time to get a good overview of his experiences.
Oh, yeah. No,
how's
the
your,
video.
How's your voice? Is it working?
I'm back.
Is
I'm
your
back.
Voice back? Okay.
Yeah.
The other thing, and this wasn't with a video, I did a kind of a summary type article, and I've highlighted major points in boldface type. And it was some of the insights that were new to me regarding the grays. And he explained that as the gray ETs get older, they get taller, and many people have always assumed that there were two species, that there were, you know, the short grays and the tall grays. The tall grays are simply the adults. That was something I'd never heard totally stated before. Another thing he explained was that the internal organs, especially the heart and lung, which is like apparently one organ in the grays, it doesn't grow enough to keep up with the growth of the body. And the older ones begin to have trouble breathing on the planet. What then happens is their kids do just fine on the earth. And they like to play on the earth. And according to the parents, it's much better for them to play in a remote place on our planet rather than on the moon or, you know, out in space. It's healthier and it's better for them. So since the older ones have trouble with our environment, they would let, I would assume their teenagers, drive these small scout ships and take younger children to the earth to play. And because the adults weren't around all the time, they weren't exactly well disciplined. So they would, you know, cause mischief like, you know, many teenagers will. And one of the things that they had learned was that I guess they must have seen old movies back from the 40s and 50s when people played chicken with their cars. And so they thought humans liked to do that, and they started playing the game of chicken with our pilots. And, of course, our pilots didn't know it was just a game and scared the hell out of them. I found that really interesting just from what I know of teenagers and children. Another thing which I truly had not heard before was apparently, and he gives the details, but the ship that went down in Roswell, the famous one we've heard talked about forever and ever and ever, was one of those being driven by a teenage gray, and he had, I think there were five on board, so he was the pilot, and then there were some children with him. And so those bodies that they found at Roswell were gray ET kids.
Oh, wow.
All of that was fairly new to me.
Well, to me as well, it makes sense, but
might explain why it's so common when you get reports from people who've had encounters with the grays that there's often a taller one with two shorter ones. So I'm guessing it would be the teenager with two children, and you know I've noticed for quite some time there's a pattern, and now there's kind of an explanation for it.
How tall do they actually get?
He probably explains it. I don't know if I have it in at the top of my head right now. The tall ones get, you know, like 4.5 feet or more. And the smaller ones are obviously smaller than that. So
yeah.
I won't, you know, I won't tell you that I know absolutely at the moment because I don't.
But those are the grays. And so are the whites a different
race
species.
Or species, I don't know, a different race, let's say. Absolutely. And they are they're tall and thin, and they would look more human.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and you know, you hear about them, and I think the one thing that the women kept telling him over and over again was that, which I found fascinating, was that the tall white ETs loved their children more than humans loved their children.
I don't know how that can be determined, but yes, they very much love their kids, and I think any human that caused their kids trouble would probably be in deep, deep trouble.
Oh, yeah, because he said if he had touched a child, they could have killed him.
And I want to make it clear that neither of these species, neither the tall whites or the grays, are physically stronger than humans. In fact, they're weaker than humans. He often talked about the tall whites having some kind of like a magic wand or rod or whatever that could, you know, zap people or knock them out or perhaps even kill them. I don't know. But without that, there was actually a fear of humans because we are stronger, especially, you know, the men, stronger and, you know, could actually really, really harm them. So I found that kind of interesting also.
You want to talk a little bit about how they felt about the pets, too?
About the what?
Pets.
Oh, yeah. They were amazed that human beings had such a caring interest in animals, other animals. They found that really surprising because, you know, we take good care of our pets, or most people are supposed to, and they just found that amazing. He, at some point or another, referred to himself as feeling like he was like a gorilla being viewed by humans because of his size and his brute strength. And the children came, they would bring the children down to watch him, almost like you would watch a trained gorilla. Not only were they interested in the different things he did as part of his job, but they were interested in, you know, this gorilla in their midst.
Well, also, the Air Force was giving them machinery and technology to repair their ships, which I found fascinating. And apparently he also said that they were building their scouts here.
I don't know if they were building them all here, but they. I remember him once referring to the tall whites as referring to their location out there as like a bus stop, where everybody could rest for 2 weeks and where they could make repairs on their vehicles.
I just find that so unusual that they would set up, I mean, we were like their garage.
And that it's well hidden. And obviously there is clearly an agreement of some kind of cooperation with the ETs and the military, or, you know, the military wouldn't be out buying catalog dresses for the tall women.
Yeah, you kind of wonder if it's still going on now. I mean, with this coming out, wouldn't you think it kind of strange that it can't still be there?
Oh, I think it could probably still be there. Nevada is pretty well guarded and protected in places where they don't want the public to be.
Wow. Because he did talk about the mountain range and everything, so kind of sort of gave their location. But I found it just so fascinating, and had never thought about them in that way. And the fact that he was able to give you so much insight into the tall whites, especially.
Right. The tall whites seem to, of course, they would be adults for the most part. And the tall whites certainly were, had much more information, much more interest, much more information to give back and forth or to share, whatever. So I'm sure that he must have enjoyed that better than he would have with the grays.
But he didn't give the indication that there was ever any real communication
between them. I mean, they would watch him when he turned on his generator because they had a similar generator that they were using in the mountains and stuff. And I guess how he would service it and stuff like that. But, you know, he never sat down and had a beer with anybody or anything like that. I mean, he never talked about where did they come from or what was their planet like, or you really didn't get a, you know, he...
No, he didn't share that, except it sounds like they definitely at least have a major base on the moon.
Yeah.
Because they referred to their kids that, you know, getting and playing on the moon wasn't as healthy and happy for their kids. So, you know, why would they make that reference? He also, I don't know if I can bring statistics back, but he also talked about these small scout crafts could fly to the moon in 15 minutes, that also
yeah.
it could fly, you know, from one pole to the other in the same amount of time. So it was like scooting around in their backyard, really.
Yeah, it, like an ATV. It almost sounded like there might be another base of some sort at the South Pole. At least that's the implication I picked up. He didn't.
Yeah, and he didn't say that, and I don't know quite how to tie in other information. But the stories that we've done in the past about the ETs that are beneath Antarctica, it sounds like a total different race of reptilians.
Uh-huh.
And on my list of ETs I want to interact with, they are not at the top of my list at all.
Well, the tall whites, they don't seem real friendly. And
no, but they. I think there was a lot of telepathic communication and a great deal of learning by observation.
Yeah.
On both sides.
You know, it's just, if I was that close to, you know, another species and could communicate, it would kill
well,
me.
Well, you might actually do a better job of it because, like I said, Charles is kind of a quiet, reserved person, and perhaps somebody with your abilities could much more easily take the communication to a higher level.
Yeah, well, that's possible. I think
mm-hmm.
once I got, you know, over the shock of somebody coming from another planet and being another species that would understand mentally whatever I sent, I would have a hell of a great time with it.
Yeah, I think once you got over that hurdle, you probably would. And I don't know how we can get an opportunity for you, but I'd certainly like to write the story of it if you do.
Oh, you're the first one I would go to. I would love to be an article on your site someday.
Well, if you get that story, I promise you'll get really good billing.
Okay, I will hold you to that. I have you on air saying that. So you had a couple of other articles about the Grays on your website as well.
Yeah, and the articles really are kind of quite different. The one we've been referring to, which I ended up titling Gray ETs, Details Not Commonly Known, which we've kind of hit the highlights
yeah.
on.
Uh-huh.
But then I have published another one called How to Fend Off an Alien Abduction, because, and maybe it's because they're crazy teenagers, I don't know, but there's so many people that I've talked to face-to-face and have certainly have read about who have been abducted by ETs. They're the ones that are associated with the poking, the prodding, the biological programs, and walking into people's bedrooms, paralyzing
yeah.
them, just doing things that any human being is going to find absolutely awful. And so I found out about a book called How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction, by Alien Druffel, and it was first published in 1998, and it's helped so many people who've been abducted, and I hit some of the highlights in the article with the idea that anybody who's had those kind of problems, once they read this article, they might very well want to go and get the book. So they can learn all the techniques that this woman presents on ways that you can break the abduction pattern. And she lists 9 major ones. I hit on 3 of them. And you just, you know, we humans don't have to deal with this. I mean, nobody has the right to do things like that against people's will. And I just think it must violate some kind of universal law. And I don't think people need to be terrorized in the way that so many people have.
Yeah, I agree. There has to be a prime directive out there for sure. And they didn't get the notice, obviously.
Right. Go ahead.
The one I laughed about was the lady who lost her temper.
Oh, okay. That is pretty dramatic. And this woman had just reached her breaking point. She'd had enough of these characters intruding into her house and into her room and into her life and into her, I think she's one of the ones where her children were being bothered too, and she'd had enough.
Mm-hmm.
And she jumped out of bed and ran toward them and attacked the taller one in the center. She didn't intend to, you know, harm it or kill it or anything like that. She simply wanted them to know that she was fed up and she'd had enough of their interference. And she grabbed the one in the middle, the tall one, by its neck, and the neck broke and the head fell backwards onto its back. Now, the reason I included that is because I think people need to know that I'm not recommending this as a way to deal with other species, but it lets you know that they are not physically superior to us. And through this book, again, the title is How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction. And, you know, it just gives you ways to stop that from happening. And, of course, the story that was sticking out in your mind and mine was this extreme case where, you know, it's called the physical struggle technique. But she really stressed the importance of mental struggle. And when I guess the creatures really get surprised when human beings show resistance. And that alone sometimes is enough to get them to back off. I'm going to quote her on the first one that she recommends. Quote, appeal to spiritual personages is perhaps the most powerful technique yet uncovered. The technique is readily available to a majority of people of all religions and walks of life, as well as by many of the great philosophers down through the millennia. So that's a quote. And people who have called in, and she lists them, God, Muhammad, Buddha, Jesus, Mary, the saints, angels, spirit guides, have been able to break the abduction pattern more readily than any of the other 8 techniques that she presents. But you don't have to be religious to find a technique that you can use to stop these abductions from happening.
Well, I think she also said that they fed on fear, and I know a lot of times when people talk about seeing them and being levitated, they say they can't move, and most probably it's fear that is freezing them, not necessarily something that the Greys have done to them.
And I don't know. I do either. That could be true, and it could be true that they're able to do something. With great concentration mentally or using the spiritual request for help, that paralysis can be broken, and people need to know that. And again, anybody, and there's got to be somebody in your audience who has had the experience of aliens being in their bedroom, or, you know, they know somebody who's been tormented by it. And again, I don't know this author, but I would highly recommend that they get this old book, How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction. It's part of my effort to stop the harassment.
You know how sometimes something happens to you and you often wonder about it, and then you think, no, I was imagining it, and then maybe I wasn't, and then maybe I was?
Mm-hmm.
I had one of those situations. I was sick. I was very sick, and I remember feeling that somebody was trying to attack me, or so I felt the presence of someone else. And at one point, I was sitting at the top of the staircase in my house, and I felt them behind me pushing me as though they were trying to push me down the stairs. Mm. And I just leaned my head against the wall, and I said, look, I've had it. I'm not going to play this game. I'm sick. My son's down there. You touch my son, I'll kill you if you're not already dead. And, you know, if you happen to be an alien, I'll hunt you across the universe. So, you know, and I just...
Now, were you thinking this intently, or were you actually saying it out loud?
Both.
Both. All right. Good for you. Well, that's what this guy recommends.
And it was really, it was funny because suddenly there was a cool breeze and it was gone. And I never had that experience again. But it was really as though there was something or someone behind me. And it wasn't a spirit, because a spirit I would have recognized. I would have,
mm-hmm.
It's a different feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, I don't know what it was or who it was, but I do
remember.
You
did the right thing.
Standing up, I couldn't stand because I had a really high fever, but I think
you couldn't stand
because
what?
I
couldn't understand you.
I had a really high fever.
Oh, okay.
So, at you know, looking back on it, was I hallucinating? Or was I not? And my strong feeling is I was not hallucinating because I've never had an experience like that before, and I've had high fevers before. So,
mm-hmm.
and I can, that makes sense. If you get angry instead of afraid, you have a powerful tool.
Mm-hmm. And she refers to righteous anger. Like, you have no right to interfere in my life. You have no right to be in here. You have no right to bother my children. And that's righteous anger. It's not just an emotional outburst.
Well, I was more frightened for my son than I was for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he was, I think he was maybe 7 or 8 years old at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, excuse me, no, it was, and I think most people have probably had that feeling and not known what it was, but they felt a presence and they couldn't tell. And you know, there was that back and forth. It's my imagination. No, it's not. Yes, it is. And I think that many people have had that kind of an experience where there truly was something there, and they just kind of dismissed it and closed their consciousness to the possibility of it.
Yeah, because we have the human being has the great capacity to act in denial, you know, ignore it, it's not there, it'll go away. And it's one of the defense mechanisms that's commonly used.
Well, having used it myself numerous times, it does work to a degree, but then when you get more into yourself and learn more about yourself and come to a greater relationship within yourself, then you look back on those situations and you start to think, huh, maybe there was something else there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I want to go back to this video because I highly recommend people do click on it, and you have the link on your website. I don't understand why the government didn't shut this guy down.
And that's puzzled me, too. All I can think of is maybe they understood him and knew he wouldn't say anything. Maybe if they had all these restrictions on him, it would have, I don't know. It doesn't fit what we normally know of the government. So, yeah, that remains an open mm-hmm. question.
I mean, this is 50-some years later.
Mm-hmm.
And he's published a four-book,
Actually,
Hospitality.
Right, and the original set that I, you know, read 16 years ago was, you know, obviously volumes 1 through 4, but then I recently read his latest one, and that's simply, let's see, what do you call it? It's, well, it's volume 5, and this is the one where I got the stories about the Greys. He hadn't
mm-hmm.
talked about that in his previous books. In fact, I recommend that if people get his last book, that they read it, the back section first. The back section is all about the ETs or the Greys and the Roswell situation. And I found that much more interesting. And then I didn't do it in this order, but I recommend it now. Then go back and read from the beginning of the book, because he has, again, the editor here is now talking, too many details or repetition in the first part of the book. But there is an interesting story of two ETs saving two Oriental orphans and bringing them back to the Nellis place, and then I guess eventually turning them over to humans so they could be adopted. So that was a kind thing to do.
Yeah, and he said also in his interview that he had saved the lives of a couple of them. Didn't tell how, but said that he had saved the lives of a couple of the tall whites. And so he just said he had saved several of their lives, and therefore, you know, they accepted him a little better. But he's very believable. There is, you know that what he's saying, he totally believes in, and, you know, I have no reason to, you know, discount him. You know, you come out with a story like this, and of course you're going to have the naysayers all over the place, and maybe the Air Force thought that if he started talking about it,
nobody would believe him, right? And that may be what they gambled on.
It would have been a safe gamble.
Because they would, most of the world, especially at that time, would have just written him off as crazy.
Well, it's
and it takes a lot of courage to come forward with that information, even today. And I think it's been a difficult time for Charles himself, because he was raised traditional Catholic, so he had to get past all the hurdles that his religion would have put on him. So, I mean, that's a big challenge too.
Yeah, I'd have a hard time keeping quiet if I had actually met a real ET, and they could prove it. You know, he said he'd even been in one of the in one of the scout ships, or in one of the, I can't remember if it was a scout ship or one of the larger ships.
I think it was one of the smaller ones, but I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't either, and I just watched it yesterday. But the scout ships looked fascinating, and they easily could have. He said that they looked white before they started to actually fly, and then they did change color when they were in the air and flying around. And it has
we get reports all the time of ET ships changing color. I mean, that's just really common. And I don't know if it's all for the same reason or not, if it's simply just the velocity at which the engines are going or what, or the degree of electromagnetic energy coming out of the vehicle. But the color changes are very, very common.
Yeah, the one I saw did that. It changed. It had different colors. But these definitely could have been the Foo Fighters during World War II. I mean, and one would wonder if they seem smaller than what appeared over Los Angeles in the Battle of Los Angeles. So those were larger ships, I believe.
By the way, we're obviously all, you know, spending more time at home this year, and was watching a movie on Netflix last night, and there were a number of Orientals in the movie, and I've had the thought before, but the movie really brought it home again, that, like, especially the Japanese people, they look like they are closer to what we see in, like, the Greys. They have the flatter face, they have the thinner body, the longer torso. You never see a big-breasted Japanese woman.
No.
And the eyes, even though they're kind of small, they're still slanted. And I just kept thinking, could they be another race that has evolved here from another source? And I am firmly open. That sounds crazy. I am open to the possibility that many of the races have been germinated from different species throughout the universe. And the Japanese certainly look a little bit more like the grays than some of the other humans that we have.
Well, look at Bigfoot. Bigfoot, when you tested the DNA, look what happened with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, half human and half some unknown primate.
Yeah.
And you can only conclude that this is a big experimental planet, where I think there's genetic manipulation going on or has been going on for a long time.
Well, that's the only way I can explain the RH factor for sure.
That's certainly something to think about.
Well, it's sad. We live here. We've been aware for the last 10,000 years. I don't know what happened before that, after the Ice Age and stuff like that. But I think we get very arrogant in thinking that, quote unquote, like Hitler said, we are the master race, because chances are we're not.
Well, I think there's a real good chance that we are not at the high scale in the universe.
No.
If we are, it's really pathetic.
Well, I look at the fact that I've often said I really think the Earth has been in quarantine, and, the highly evolved terrestrials out there have been told to leave us alone until we've reached their level of...
Until we grow up a bit.
Technology.
Yeah, because we are.
Yeah.
We're viewed as a very violent race.
And then look at what happened to us. We have all been put on house arrest just about for the last 9 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And, with the pandemic. I think that while at first, we all behaved quite nicely, I think that 9 weeks is about as far as most people are going to let it go.
Right, and many people are coming out of this quarantine just full of rage, and so we're getting a lot of very antisocial behavior, especially in the big cities.
Oh, yeah. But when you look at the fact that you had something on your website about it, I think. I remember reading something a bit ago about the pandemic and how it was targeting certain
one of our whistleblowers who has given us information in the past, which has been very accurate, and so I have reason to believe he knows what he's talking about. And I think I can find it for sure here. His story is in our Deep Throat section. And
uh-huh.
You can find that on the homepage. Open up Deep Throat, and once you open it, there's an article, third from the top, and it's coronavirus created in the laboratory. Goes into quite a bit of detail there. And because of that, I just have posted a story which is very personal. It's called Mad Scientists Blame Monkeys for Virus.
Yeah.
That's the title. And the reason that I wrote it was because 25 years ago I met Dr. Joanne Whitaker, and she's a medical doctor with truly incredible credentials. And as a friend, she confided in me that HIV/AIDS was created in the lab. And then she pulled out a copy of the congressional record that showed where Congress, back in the late 1970s, had okayed the development of something that sounded just like AIDS, that would, almost be used like a weapon. And a few years later, the disease entered the U.S. and was officially named AIDS in 1982. But our mad scientists blamed it on some monkeys in Africa.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, you know, I think it's really, really sad that we have the mad scientists who create these kind of things in the lab. But this was, you know, somebody who, you know, I mean, her, I should really touch on some of her credentials. I mean, she went to Bowman Gray School of Medicine. She taught in 7 different medical schools. She started a medical school in Thailand and did training programs for physicians in Vietnam. She started the first hospice in Florida, and she found an accurate test for Lyme disease. She won the American Medical Society's Distinguished Service Award. I mean, she was truly an amazing woman. And since I knew her personally and had every reason to trust her, I found her information, you know, very credible. And if I had been doing the website back then, I would have been there with a tape recorder and my camera. But I wasn't, so that's, you know, I can't give a whole lot of details. If I had a copy of that congressional record, I would have posted it.
Oh, yeah, and I want to recommend everybody go to her website, Skyships Over Cashiers, and look for the article, Coronavirus Whistleblowers Protection Advice.
Oh, by the way, we got in deep doo-doo trouble with that one. Once that was posted, we could no longer, we sent out one batch of notices, which I do email notices when we have new information on the website. And because I was using Yahoo, I could only send out X a number at a time. So the first batch went out, and after that, I could never again send even a single blind copy or a single copy. I could only send a simple email. And so we are in the midst of and have switched to a different server, and so far the information's getting out there. I'm still learning how to do it, and the last batch went out looking really stupid because I didn't realize that when I copied and pasted into the new system that the coding didn't go with it, so the letters came out different sizes. And but
well,
I learned.
We'll just put it out on Nightlight. It's Coronavirus Whistleblowers Protection Advice. It is eye-opening, and it's not going to surprise anybody, but I love the last line, and it's, one can bet if a COVID-19 vaccine is released, it will be filled with all sorts of nasty stuff.
Yeah, that's very unsettling, isn't it?
It is, and I had already made a personal decision that if they do have a vaccine, that I will not take it. And that's
going to be a tough decision for people to make.
But
you know, there's already been improvements in, they have found ways that work better in treating people now. I mean, the simple thing of getting them to be on their stomach instead of on their backs, that they're able to get air more easily. There's been a number of things they've learned which, you know, have increased. I mean, when I first started keeping track of statistics, it was well past 30% of the people were dying that got the disease.
Yeah.
And I haven't looked in a day or two, but it's down below 20% now. So it's dropped between 12 and 15%. Because they've learned some stuff from all of this.
Well, and one thing that makes great sense that I had not even thought about for men, no mask will do any good against it unless you're clean shaven. This is not a good time for beards.
Yeah.
That makes males are one of the primary demographics being targeted. And I swear to you, though I haven't seen it any place, I haven't read it any place. This is purely I'm you know, putting in a, this is my opinion only, and this is not on Mary's website. But I truly believe that we're going to find over time that this virus is going to sterilize people.
Oh, I do think that's part of the intention. And I think that's part of the reason that, they, you know, according to this whistleblower, the males have been targeted more than females. And I do know from the statistics that have come out that the percentage of men dying of it is higher than women.
Yeah. And
and you know, there's two, I can see this from two points of view. From like the moon looking down, I'm going, you see these cities that we have, you know, Hong Kong and Melbourne and New York, and they're just, I don't know, piles of people in rock buildings. And it looks like we've been, like, it's been overpopulated, and I do think we have a population problem. I don't like this method of bringing the population down. I think there's ways that could be done much better, but I do think that's part of the motivation of what's going on, because we're messing up the environment. We're polluting things. You know, we are destroying the planet in so many ways, and in some respects, a distant, cold-hearted entity might see us as a virus ourselves.
Well, the Earth may look upon us as a virus.
Yes, looking up.
I mean, heck, we're ants across the surface, and we've tunneled inside just like ants do. So, no, I think I'm hopeful that, although I have to admit that I had in my predictions for what I saw coming, I saw riots. I still do.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan is a really good example of what's starting to...
Yeah, we're already seeing that to some degree.
...to handle under the surface, and I think until... probably the first of the year, it's not going to calm down. And I don't mean the virus. I just mean the population.
Just human behavior.
Yep.
Yep,
I
would agree.
And I would be, I mean, I have a personal belief as to who's going to be elected president. And if that happens, I do believe there are going to be riots. So if people needed... you know, therapy dogs and lollipops after the last election, I imagine it will be the same this way. And with people coming out of, you know, 9 weeks in hibernation, so to speak, it won't be easy for those who have a belief system that is against others' belief systems. So I think that we're in for a rough couple of months, but, you know, we are a very tenacious group of people here in America, North America even, and I believe we'll come out of this, but it's going to be it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
but thanks, for sure.
You
know, thanks to you for your amazing website, because Skyships Over Cashiers puts that information out there. How often do you update that site?
Every week or every 2 weeks.
It's amazing. There's always something.
But it's usually like two or three stories at a time.
I want to also tell people, after they've gone and looked at the website, to check the archives, because she has over a decade of archives there that will absolutely blow your mind. The material is just so good. And at the very least, it's great trivia to talk about at dinner with your family, or it educates you in a way that you never thought you needed or could be educated. It's just a phenomenal website, and I'm just so delighted that you spend, you know, one evening a month with us to help put some of this information out there to a larger audience than your website hits. You know,
thank you.
Because
thank
people
you.
Don't
and,
know about it.
You know, we're not. This is not a money-making venture. This is simply a passion, I guess, to get information out to people.
Uh-huh.
So, I guess I'm just down at the core of me, just somebody who likes to learn and share what I learn.
Yeah, and the more trouble you get into, the better you get, because you must know you're hitting somebody's nerve someplace if people are censoring you to any degree at all. So. Good for you.
Oh, I hope that we've managed to get around the problem this time.
Well, Facebook censured me a while back, and I really flipped out because I had just criticized somebody a little bit. It was only a little bit, and they cut me off like crazy. So I know what it feels like.
Wow.
Yeah, it happens to all of us. So you've joined a really good club, but I noticed our time is up.
I enjoyed talking to you, and I hope you have a really good week.
Oh, it's going to be a good week, and thank you so much again. You're such a pleasure to talk to and to talk about all of these issues, and I hope that we put some information out there that will tantalize others to do some more research.
Thank you.
Thank you again, and I will talk to you, well, I'll talk to you probably before next month, but next month we will do this again.
All righty. You and your audience have a very nice sleep.
Thank you. And everybody, thank you very much for listening in. And again, if you're listening in archive, please subscribe to the channel so that you'll know when Mary comes back again and all of the other good stuff that goes on here. Have another show tomorrow night with a new host on Nightlight. So please tune in to hear David Collis's first show. That would be 10 p.m. Eastern time. And, of course, next week, again, four shows. So, four shows, no waiting. So have a good evening. Take care of yourselves. Stay well, stay healthy, and stay isolated until you get free to go. Good night, everybody.